Of talks, and there's also no happiness hour, as far as I know, so that's good. So it's been an exciting time here in the Bay Area the last couple of weeks for a variety of reasons. Usually this is Halloween time, which is kind of among the high holy days here, and our city, which is one of the things I love about San Francisco, that grown-ups are into Halloween too. But then also, of course, we have the World Series win of the Giants. So I live in this neighborhood, and about 24 hours ago, this whole street of 16th Street was a spontaneous giant block party where people poured out of the bars and celebrated on the streets there. And then today we have Election Day. I see many people with their I voted stickers, so hooray for you for doing that. And also it's today the Dia de los Muertos, right? So Day of the Dead, which is a Mexican origin celebration. So around this time, Halloween, the Day of the Dead, also All Souls Day in the Catholic calendar, since we're in this Christian church, it's the time when the thin veil between the living and the dead is lifted, right? So opportunity to interact in a different way with those who have passed. So, and also a time to remember friends, loved ones, relatives who have died, right? So it's good to take time to do that. And keeping this in mind, I thought I might share a little bit with you about some of the Buddhist teachings around sort of cosmology and death and life and this kind of thing. So, you know, usually in my bio, if people read where I went in my education and stuff, it's not really necessarily so relevant. But I did actually study Buddhism in college at Harvard a very long time ago. So now I'll pull some of that out here. So these are some of the teachings of the Buddha around sort of the world systems and kind of cosmology and death and things like that. So these are all things that it's very difficult for most of us to verify. So I offer them more for your interest, as well as that there's a way in which there's a connection between this level of teachings and understanding our own mind. So that's really the angle that I want to go with on sharing some of this with you, is how can we understand our own experience and how can we understand our own mind in light of some of these teachings, which every different tradition has some teachings about this kind of thing. So the first thing to say about Buddhist cosmology is that it's vast, 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 right? So the span of time that the Buddha talks about and that the Buddhist teachings talk about is huge. And I think this is somewhat true of just in general in many South Asian, Asian cultures, is that there is a very vast sense of time. So my family is originally from Sri Lanka, and I was born here, but I have a lot of relatives, so I go back frequently, see them, and people get married and visit grandma and things like that. And I remember taking one of my friends from college, who is a European-American, a couple times ago, and I went, and we went to this museum, and she was kind of amazed because the exhibits were just about such great, huge lengths of time of civilization. And there was one exhibit that was talking about a group of people who were recent immigrants to Sri Lanka, so they said, who had come like 250 years ago. You know, those are considered recent immigrants, right? And she was laughing and saying, like, oh, you know, in the U.S. and the Smithsonian, they have exhibits about, like, the 1950s. You know, that's, like, our history is, like, the 1950s. Here's Fonzie's jacket and, you know, stuff like that. So, so the range of time is vast here, huge. So to give you a sense of this, the universe is said to be expanding and contracting, right? And in each of these expansions and contractions, it's like the world is basically created and then destroyed again, right? But the time of this expansion contraction is huge. So it's called like a Mahakalpa, so the name of this length of time. So Mahakalpa is like such a large range of time that it's hard to explain. But the Buddha is always a very brilliant teacher and used a lot of metaphors. So people ask him about this, like, how long is this time, this expansion-contraction thing, right? It interests you, right? Like, is it going to be before I get to go on vacation? Is it like, you know, before I get to do something, you know. So no. So if you imagine, here's one of the metaphors. If you imagine that there's a cube that's 16 miles by 16 miles by 16 miles, right? This cube, right? Huge. And every 100 years, one mustard seed is dropped into this cube, right? By the time the cube is filled, the kapha will still not be finished, right? So that big. Or another metaphor is that there's a mountain as big or bigger than Mount Everest, right? Huge mountain. And again, every 100 years, a bird flies by with a silk scarf in his mouth, and the silk scarf just like brushes the mountain, right? So every 100 years. So the amount of time that it takes the mountain to wear down to nothing, the kalpa is still going on. Okay. So we're talking huge ranges of time, right? And then, in terms of this sort of expansion, contraction kind of thing, how many of these have happened? So he also said, you know, the monks asked him, like, well, how many of these have gone on? You know, and also that's huge. Also, it's vast, right? So he says, you know, the Ganges River, which is this great, huge river in India, if you take all the grains of sand from the base of the river all the way to the ocean, right, all through the Ganges River, the amount of the kalpas that have come and gone are still more than these. So this is kind of blowing your mind about these things, right? Like, don't even try to sort of fathom. It's, like, huge, right? Which can create a sense of real spaciousness, you know, in this. Because during all of these times, then, all of us here, currently identified as humans who are incarnated here, or other beings listening in other ways, have been going around and around in what we could call the endless round of rebirth here in samsara, right? So kicking it back and forth, round and around, right? So Buddhist teachings, I'm sure you're familiar with, is the teaching of rebirth also, right? Which is also similar in Hinduism, so kind of common in that those kinds of religion, is that the death of the physical body is one thing, but then there is some continuation of this process of consciousness in connection with another life form. Right, that happens. So now these life forms also, there's actually vast amounts of realms. There's huge amounts of different forms that you can be born in, right? So as humans, you know, we've kind of studied the natural world, and you know, like, oh, there's all these different kinds of insects, and like slugs, and birds, and you know, then you get into the mammals, and the furry creatures, and the birds, and all that, right? So that's all like one realm, all of the animals, of like 31 possible realms of rebirth, right? So the realms go all the way from the heavenly realms, the super-duper heavenly realms, all the way down to the depths of hell realms. So actually in Buddhist teachings there are heavens and hells, and there are actually gods, so to speak, right? In case you're wondering, we're actually like fifth from the bottom, so here in the human realm. So there's a lot better. But this is considered the best place to be for engaging with teachings of liberation, right? So the realms below include the animal realms and then various hell realms in which there's a lot of suffering. And when you're in a lot of suffering, it's really hard to engage with anything beyond how much your life is terrible, right? And how much you're suffering. So you can relate to this also from times in your own life. Sometimes it's too hard to actually like pull yourself up and like see any light, right? And then actually the realms above us go into realms in which things are actually really great. So there are some realms that are somewhat sense realms, right? Realms in which the physical body is actually very ephemeral in some ways, right? So it doesn't smell or exude liquids or odors or, you know, any of the things that our human bodies do. But in fact, these gods are born and many of them don't know that they're going to die, right? So in some of these god realms, like, they don't know they're going to die and they have very long lives. And it's not like they can see sort of aging going on, but it's just like right at the end of their very, very long and beautiful life, they start to smell bad and like pass away. But for a long time, they can kind of cruise, right? And You know, it's said that basically, like, things are so good there that there's no incentive to actually do anything else, right? Like, there's no incentive to sort of introspection or, you know, well, what's it all about or what's the meaning of it or anything like that, right? And then some of the heavenly realms are actually immaterial realms, so formless realms too, right? So our realm is considered the best place because it's actually a mix of pleasure and pain, right? So it's not, for some people, so hellish all the time that you don't have, like, a little window of light you can kind of think about things or pay attention. We have a certain amount of intelligence, right? But also, it's also not so great that you can cruise for that long, right? The physical body is one of the things that helps us with that, right? Because even as you're just sitting here for 45 minutes, the body starts to complain, right? In, like, small or large ways about posture, about the cushion you're sitting on, right? About the way the knees are, about pressure, about the temperature, right? So you could consider from this angle that your body is your friend in this way, because it's like calling you back, you know? It's like calling you back, like, oh, pay attention, you know? So in the Buddhist teachings, it's encouraged that we actually consider death, and we actually reflect on death, right? That we remember that we are going to die, right? So both for the sake of knowing this as a fact of the way things are, right? And it said, you know, this is the most wondrous thing. I think it's in the Mahabharata. The most wondrous thing is that everyone sees everyone else dying around them but never thinks that they're going to die, right? So consider that for yourself. Like, do I actually get that? Like, do I actually think that I'm going to die, right? So maybe on some intellectual level, like, yeah, it'll probably happen, right? But, you know, do I actually think, like, one of these days my life will be over as I know it, right? And I don't know which of those days it will be either, right? So this is not, meant to spook you on Day of the Dead, per se, although it might, but this is actually to come into contact with reality, right? So death is certain, only time of death is uncertain, right? All that is dear and beloved from me will be, I will be separated from in one way or another, right? So if you grow old, then you have old age. If you don't grow old, then you die young, right? So this is kind of like the straight talk from the Buddha, you know. This is the way it is. It's like as simple as that, right? So we can also reflect on these different realms, and there's much more elaboration I could do about the different realms, but I think it's kind of unnecessary. If you're interested, you can kind of look into it, but I would caution you not to get too fascinated with it, both because it can be like a big kind of way that if your mind is oriented towards complexity, it can be something to just get really interested in, but actually not necessarily help you focus any better on your own liberation, right? But if it is something that will sort of inspire you in terms of the kind of scope, then you could look into it a little bit more. But the basics of it is that there are these different realms, and these realms actually do correspond, in fact, to states of mind that we currently also could experience, right? So think about a time in your life when you were, for example, if you had such a time in which you were very jealous, right, of someone for some reason. So maybe you were in a relationship with someone and you got very jealous about something, someone else who would like them. Or maybe in a job and someone else got something that you wanted, like a promotion or something like that. Maybe even when you were a kid, right? A sibling had some ability that you liked, or you felt like your mother liked them better than you, something like that, right? So the realm of jealousy is like one of the hell realms, right? If you can ever remember a time when you were actually like gripped and driven by jealousy, right? Or by rage or something like that. In those times, like, you are actually experiencing what it's like to be caught in a hell realm, right? And then conversely, the times in which you experience some of the more refined states. So this metta that we practiced at the end of the sitting is actually one of the Brahma Viharas. It's called the realms of the gods, right? So these four qualities that Buddha taught about cultivating loving kindness, cultivating compassion, cultivating equanimity, cultivating appreciative joy. Right. So these are actually the realms of the gods, and when you cultivate this state of mind and actually become completely concentrated and absorbed in that state of mind, you are actually living in that realm of the gods, right? And supposed to be like actually a positive precondition for rebirth in those realms is to hang out there a lot. So it's kind of like hang out where you want to live. This is kind of like dress for your next job, you know, dress for the position you want to have, right? It's like take your mind to the place that you want to go, right? So during these practices, we get a taste of that, like what it's like to actually be in these states of purity, right? Of complete oneness with love, with equanimity, with joy. Right? And then for most of us, we bounce around, you know. Sometimes we taste this one, and sometimes we taste that one, right? And this is also the factor of change, right? That we can see this in our mind stream, this continuous change of different moods, different mind states, different thoughts that come and go. And then we can notice which ones we get caught by. So here's where the practice is really powerful, because with mindfulness practice, the first step is knowing what is it that's here, right? Like, what realm am I in today, you know? And really, it's like you get reborn into these different realms, you could say. You know, whether or not you believe in, like, the actual rebirth, and, you know, I could be a snail, and I could be this and that, right, in a different realm. Like, you look at rebirth even just now, right? When you wake up in the morning, like, sometimes you're in this mood, sometimes you're in that mood, right? And then you go somewhere else, and then suddenly something else arises. So notice, like, what's in your mind, right? Notice how your mind stream is, right? And notice that some things come up, and then those states seem to stick, you know? Sometimes there's a state of fear that arises, and it seems like we get caught in that, right? Like we can't get out of that. Or sometimes we hang around with people who are very, like, generous and loving, and that facilitates ourselves being generous and loving, right? So sometimes we're hanging out in that realm, too. So really paying attention to what are the states of mind and heart that I'm cultivating in my life in this way, right? Like, what realms am I living in right here and now on earth in my regular life, right? And what are the things that facilitate the ones that feel like they're better for me, better for others, right? So it seems like kind of a mundane thing, but from this angle, it's like paying attention to what realm you are taking rebirth in all the time. So just know, you could check in the morning, you could check in the afternoon, check in the evening. Like, oh, okay, where am I today? Oh, I'm in the hungry ghost realm today. Hungry ghost realm is like this eternal greed, and this is supposed to be like these beings that are like eternally greedy and hungry, but they have only like mouths the size like of a straw, right? So they can't actually ever satisfy that, right? So they can only like take something from a straw, but they're like really, really hungry all the time, right? Not fun, right? So, but sometimes you feel like that, right? Sometimes it's like there's this thirst, there's this yearning for something, right? And it's like you can't get it, you can't get it, you can't get it, right? So feel that, like feel the suffering of that, know that, right? Become familiar with that. See that that's not actually the realm that you want to live in, right? Because without examination, we just kind of get bounce around these realms all the time, get stuck in that one, right? Or know what you can do to cultivate the other ones, right? Like, basically, at all different times of our life, we're cultivating something or the other. So we're cultivating greed, we're cultivating love, we're cultivating fear, we're cultivating concentration, right? So, like, oh, what am I cultivating today, right? What do I cultivate in my, quote-unquote, free time, right? Like, where's my mind hanging out when I'm on the bus or in the checkout line or, you know, the in-between times? It can be really interesting to see, like, oh, what realm am I born in today? What realm am I in at this moment? Right? And check it out. Yeah. So that's a kind of quick and kind of general tour through some of the Buddhist cosmology. But again, the angle is not necessarily like you have to buy that whole thing, because, you know, it's not something that most of us can verify per se. But I feel like, generally speaking, that idea, there's like higher realms, lower realms, and we actually know that right now, is actually a very helpful one to consider. As well as like to consider this vast array of time in which we live. So, you know, some of the Mahayana teachings also are actually to reflect on this in terms of our relationships to other people, right? So when there's one Tibetan practice, which is like, go around and imagine that everyone who you see was your mother, right, at some point. So this is imagining that your mother is a positive relationship in your life. So hopefully that's the case, right? So, you know, that everyone who you meet basically was someone who gave their all to nurture and protect you, right? Or the opposite, like imagine that everyone who you meet is actually your child, right? So in this life, we have these particular relationships in which we invest a lot, right? And that's good. It's not like there's something wrong with that and, oh, I need to treat my child like a stranger because that's more equanimous. Like, it's not like that at all. Like, yeah, you should feed your kid and take them to school and, you know, teach them and all of that, right? But what if everyone had that relationship with you? Yeah. Like, what if everyone was completely beloved to you? Yeah. Like, what if you were so happy to see, like, that person who just stepped onto BART? You know, like, what would that be like? You know, if you're like, oh, you're back. Oh, you know, right? Like, imagine how nice that would be for that person and also for you, right? So, you know, can you just play around with that a little bit? So in this scheme of mahakalpas and of endless rebirth, it's like, yeah, we probably all have, you know, had these different relationships to each other. So strangers have been friends, you know, enemies have been lovers, and lovers have been pets, you know. It's like all it's like all mixed in, right? So it just kind of loosens up also our current ideas about how things are, and it's fixed, and, you know, this is me and that's you, and, you know, our fixed ideas of identity and who's better or worse or anything like that, right? And then also just giving compassion, you know, because all of us have been knocking around for a really, really long time, you know, a really, really long time, right? And what is our relationship to other beings given this fact? Right? Like, what would it be like if actually you're in an area in which you're kind of in a... don't pay that much attention to people. Like, say you're in Muni. You're on Muni, riding Muni, right? And suddenly you find, like, actually the Muni ride is going on for eternity, right? Sometimes it seems like it's going on for eternity, but this time actually it is going on for eternity. And actually everyone in this Muni bus is going to be your universe, right? So everyone in the Muni bus is going to be like the person you fall in love with and your employer and the person who is your kid and your neighbor and the person who is your enemy and is trying to kill you and the person who is your teacher and, you know, like everyone here. And then it's all going to shift around, right? And you're there for eternity. Like all of you, stuck on Muni, right? So that's kind of what it is like, except there's a lot more people, so, you know, and a lot more beings knocking around, so, you know, I can kind of not get as fixated. But we do get fixated, right? Like, we get fixated on what our current situation is and ignoring the rest of the people and kind of identifying who's in our team, who's in the other team, etc., right? So some of the power of the metta practice also, if you do more formal sort of loving kindness practices, that you kind of break that down by seeing like, okay, can I wish well first for those who are in my sort of inner circle of beloveds? Then can I wish well for my friends similarly? Can I wish well for the neutral people, which, you know, most of the 6 billion people on the earth are, right? People I don't think about one way or the other. Then can I actually wish well for the difficult people, right? So these kinds of practices are also like kind of helpful to help shape the heart, change the heart, and kind of change our relationship to the way that we see things. So we see things in one way, in this visual way, and then we see things in one way based on our ideas of things, right? And you don't have to buy the ideas that I've just put out, but it sometimes can help to just try them on, just to loosen otherwise our ideas about exactly how things are, exactly who we are. So I'll leave you with this, that batch of wackiness for you to consider and see if anyone has any reflections, any questions about that. We can engage in some discussion. Yeah.
I really don't have a lot to be angry about. There was one particular person that I was fixated on. And I live it was shocking how angry I was. And then I would sit on the cushion in silent Vipassana meditation all day, which almost was excruciatingly torture, pain, hell, because I couldn't calm my thoughts, I couldn't make it go away, I started crying, I tried to take my eyes open. Like, it was just, it was so horrible. It was like, the worst day I've ever had on the cushion in like 12 years of meditating on a weekly, daily basis. And then I felt bad for myself. I mean, I felt critical of myself and judgment of myself that I was being such a bad Buddhist practitioner and having these thoughts and, you know, feeling this way. And it was really hard for me to let go of that. And trying to come around, was it having more compassion for me? Was it having compassion for this other person? Realizing that, you know, I may be on the path, she isn't kind of living in the dark and unconscious state. There was just no answer to it. It was just something I had to accept. And, you know, I finally just went home and had a bath and a glass of wine and a bowl of risotto, and life was much better. But it was just really, that's never happened to me before, to just wake up in such a completely altered state, and none of my usual tricks were helping. Whether it was in my car, driving off,
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Pema Chodron. You said Pema Chodron tapes, right? Yeah. I actually just saw Pema Chodron teaching. Some of you probably did too. She was up in Craneway Pavilion, which is in Richmond. It's this very beautiful, like, giant warehouse thing on the water. And it's the first time I ever went there. And there was maybe 3,000 people, and Pema's teaching and all this. And then I just went up there on Saturday for this Halloween women's roller derby event. And it was just seeing, like, you know, so it was this totally different scene. It's the exact same, you know, arena, right? And people were all in Halloween costumes, and it was like women's roller derby. People, like, you know, hip checking each other out, you know. So, I mean, it's like that too. It's like, oh, here's this different realm, you know, from Pema Chodron to Halloween women's roller derby. So, I mean, I think one thing is like the aspect of just getting interested in it. So, you know, one of these realms of the lower realms is like this angry god realm, actually. It's like the titans, and they're just fighting all the time. And I think they don't even remember what they're fighting about, but they're just like warring all the time, you know. So it's kind of like that. Sometimes you're born into this realm. So sometimes if your mind is oriented in this way, like for me sometimes this kind of, even if you take it as mythology or some kind of lens like this, helps to just be like, oh, today I'm in the titan realm, the warring god realm, okay. So this is what it's like. So let me see what it's like, right? So there's often a part that's like railing against the suffering about it, you know, which is like, let me put in the Pema Chodron tape. No, let me do this. Risotto or something, right? You know, I don't mean to make fun, because this is what all of us do this in some way. It's like, how do I get out of this, right? How do I make this end, right? But usually the answer is like, the way out is the way through, you know? We think like the way out is, I'm going to suppress it. I'm going to pretend it's not there. I'm going to cover over the unpleasant with the pleasant. I'm going to do, you know, there's like a lot of kind of like common strategies we take, usually none of which works for very long, you know? So then finally we kind of get cornered by it, and it's like, oh, okay, this is what it is, you know? It's kind of like you have to eat what's on your plate. Particularly in intensive practice, it's like, but it's true in life in general. Like, you have to eat what's on your plate. So, okay, here's what it is. And to some extent, it's good to reflect, like, okay, why did this come about? What are the causes and conditions? But sometimes you don't know, or sometimes you think you know, but you miss it. You know, sometimes you're like, oh, it's that person. Whereas actually what it is that your shoes are too tight. You know, like you're blaming it on something over there, but it is like, oh, I have this pebble in my shoe. And that actually has been making me irritable, like, all day, right? So, but we construct this big story, like, it's because that person's breathing too loud, that's why, you know, it's their fault, right? And, you know, then machinate how we're going to make them breathe differently, and they need to get a ventilator, you know, whatever, right? So really then it's like, okay, this is what it is. This is what it is. I'm in the Titan realm. This is the warring god realm. Like, let me see what this is like. So actually just bringing a lot of interest to that. Like, what's it like to be in this place, right? Like, what's it like? And let me feel this also with interest and compassion as much as possible. Because today may be the first day of my life that I've been born in this realm, but some people live in this realm a lot, you know. Like, some people lead much of their life in this realm. And it's karma, too. You know, I mean, it really is karma. Like, people who are born in war-torn countries, you know. I was just reading something about, like, child soldiers, right? Like, there's many countries in which, like, kids are fighting wars, you know. And those kids, like, what have they done? They just, you know, took birth in this country, and then they're, like, kind of conscripted. And here they are at, like, 12, you know, running around with some armament, care of the U.S. government usually, you know, or somewhere else, right? Instead of going trick-or-treating, and that's their life, right? So then it's like, be afraid, kill or be killed, and that's it, you know? What can they do? So it's like, with compassion, be like, okay, what's it like to be in this state of mind? Like, let me feel what this is like. Let me actually feel this in my body, in my heart, right? And actually, if you're able to really feel it, then that allows that energy system to kind of move through, you know? The trick is, though, you have to really feel it without that idea, like, now I'm going to feel you so you will move through, because I just heard that you'll move through if I feel, you know, like, you have to really be willing to be present with it, like, you know, like, or it kind of sticks around, right? And then you have to see also, sometimes it's like, okay, there's something underneath of this, like, I'm trying to pay attention, but it's just endlessly going. So what's underneath of this? Is there something actually fueling this? You know, so something that lasts many, many hours, oftentimes there's something underneath. So is it, what is it? With anger, sometimes sadness, sometimes self-righteousness, that's a popular one, right? It's like, no, I'm right, they're wrong, right? So then feel that one. Sometimes fear. Fear is a popular subterranean fuel for states, right? So then it's actually, okay, let me drop into that. Let me feel that. Like, what's that like? And just totally be present with that in as intimate and direct a way as you can, without trying to make it end, you know? So that's kind of the advice I'd have for that. So sometimes this lens of the different realms can be happy just to get a sense of distance from it. Not like, I am stuck in this and I need to get out of it, but it's like, oh, okay, this is what this is. This is like kind of like semester abroad in the warring god realm or something, you know, or my day trip. We won't give you a semester. It's like my day trip to, you know, I didn't mean to go there, but here it is, you know, like somehow I got here, right? Hopefully there's a return ticket, right? But, you know, so, yeah. So, yeah, thank you for your comment. Others? Yeah.
Are there some resources you would recommend for meditative practices that are structured around cultivating experiences in some of these realms?
Yeah, well, the Brahma Viharas is the top-notch one, I'd say, you know. You want more obscure? Let's see, more obscure.
One time I did a Tibetan meditation practice called Big Sky Meditation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those ones bring the sort of spaciousness one, yeah. So the question was, are there particular meditative practices that can help you to cultivate some of these states, right, basically? I mean, Brahma Viharas are like not to be sniffed at, really, because you can start with a sort of like, you know, we just did it in a few minutes at the end, you know, may all beings be happy kind of thing. But actually, you can go very, very deep with them. And there's the basic ones that I mentioned, which are the loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. And then using those, you can actually develop states of concentration, like basically states of absorption, right, on those particular states, using those states as sort of the focus of absorption. And through that absorption is actually where you go to these to realms that are also considered realms of the gods. So these different levels of concentration or jhanas are also another way to explore that, right? So, you know, we have our life force and we eat and we drink and then we have energy and stuff like that. And then what do we do with that, right? So a lot of our energy gets kind of dissipated. Like, we're pretty distracted a lot of the time, you know. And you know, I think I've heard studies that we use this very small portion of our brain, too, right? So developing concentration is actually kind of harnessing that power of our mind-body in a very powerful way. So it's like, what if we distill that? So concentration being like focus, not like bearing down, but kind of focus, like sort of like, you know, orange juice concentrate is sort of like the distilled essence of orange juice or something like that, right? So what if we were able to distill the energy and power of our mind and heart? Like, what would that be like, right? And so then as you are able to distill that sort of more and more, you reach these different states of concentration in which there's kind of access to these different realms that are actually considered like the realms of the, also some of these sort of like heavenly realms. And it's good to hang out in them during the time you hang out in them. And it also is good because it helps to let go of other other kinds of drives. So here we are in this, we're considered in the realm of sense desire, right? So we're in the realm of like, basically like seeking pleasure and running away from pain and, you know, like a lot of our life, if you actually pay attention, is like trying to seek out good experiences, like positive, pleasant experiences, right? Like we actually spend a lot of energy doing that. Like check it out sometimes, like how much of my energy is going towards, in some way, machinating pleasant experiences, right? So nothing wrong with that per se, like nothing wrong with having a certain level of, you know, comfort and stuff like that, but like, where do I spend all my energy, right? So once you actually have, your mind, heart has spent time in connection with some of these other more refined states, it actually helps to let go of the kind of driving sense desire we have for like your basic stuff in some ways. So it's kind of like if, you know, after you've had like a very nice like chocolate pastry or something, it seems like very unrefined to like eat a spoonful of sugar, you know, like you probably wouldn't do that, right? Or like kids would still do that, like put sugar on everything, right? But then after a while, you don't want to do that. You'll eat maybe a cookie, but a nice cookie, or, you know. So it's something like that. It's sort of like as we come into contact with more refined states of mind-heart, then like our mind-heart knows that as a place to be and is like, oh, I don't actually need that as much. Now you can still access pleasure, but then your relationship to it is different because it's not driven by this like, oh, I must have that. Like that's going to do it for me. That's going to solve everything or, you know. So then actually when you can actually be totally present with pleasure in and of itself, you can actually experience it much more and enjoy it much more in some ways. So that's the pitch for jhana practices as another way to access that. But yeah, both those, you can take them to like very refined realms. So that's good. Yeah. Others? Questions? Comments? All right, so we're coming up to 9 now, I think. Sorry. I just realized, I just looked at the time. But come up afterwards if you want to, and we'll talk about it. So, all right. So, if there's anything that has been confusing or perplexing about anything that I said, I encourage you to drop it and leave it on the floor here at the church. It'll be swept up in the end. No need to, like, worry too much about it. But if you're interested, you can also, you know, read more about these things. I this copy of the Digha Nikaya, which is the long discourses of the Buddha. And there's some stuff in this, which you can find online also, Digha Nikaya, D-I-G-H-A, in which he talks about some of this kind of thing. Or you can find other resources online if you're interested. But also, like I said, don't like spend too much time trying to figure it out because we can't really figure it out. Like even that which I've told you about the specific realms, like I don't know about them, you know, that's like things I've heard. But I do know the experiences of mind-heart that I've had in this lifetime, you know, including access to concentration states and access to Brahmaviharas. So I know those are real and that those can be cultivated and that that's the way to freedom. So I'll leave you with that. So we'll sit together for a minute and just share the merit from our practice here. So appreciating the opportunity to come together and reflect on teachings of liberation. Appreciating ourselves for having spent the time to come here, given all the things we could be doing. Appreciating the Sangha as supporting us on our path of inquiry and freedom. We share the blessings from our practice with everyone here and with all beings in all the many realms, seen, unseen, near and far. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free from suffering.
I wanted to thank Anushka so much for being here and remind everybody that we pay $150 to rent the church on Tuesday nights, and we have a little bit smaller crowd tonight. So we not only want to pay for the church, but we want to support Anushka for all the beautiful wisdom that she shared with us tonight. So if you're able to support the church and support Anushka, you can offer the donna over in the basket on the organ, and we hope to see you next week. Thanks so much to everybody for being here.
After that.